AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction.
Well, the markets appear to be circling the terminal in anticipation of this morning's reports. Actually, feeder cattle says, hold my beer. We'll be talking crops, music, infrastructure, and who knows what else. Stick around, something for everybody on today's AgriTalk. Live from Report Day Morn via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we begin with a talk with Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Then it's country music performer Alex Miller. We'll chat with Mike Steenhook from the Soy Transportation Coalition and later Farm Journal wordsmith Chris Bennett. Right after the news, Greg Henderson from Drover's Chip Flory, indisposed at the moment. And so, here's me, everybody. Thanks for tuning in to AgriTalk. Sure glad to bend your ear for a little while this morning. Glad you've tuned in. Yeah, if you've been following the situation, if you've been paying attention, Chip is off doing some family stuff. And I guess I would just echo his sentiments from earlier this week that he really appreciates the support from you good folks during this difficult time for him. It's been quite the summer for the Flory family, and so he's dealing with a few things. But Crop Tour is right around the corner, and it sounds like my man is going to soldier up. He's going to be out there in the fields. He'll be out on the western leg next week as Pro Farmers Crop Tour gets underway. And speaking of Crop Tour, we've got longtime Eastern Leg director Brian Grady, the editor of Pro Farmer, coming up next. And I want to talk to him a little bit about Crop Tour, his expectations, what he saw last year. But we've also got to get ready for these reports, people. They're right around the corner, less than an hour away, 11 a.m. Central Time. USDA is going to release some very key reports. And so I'm anxious to hear what Mr. Grady has to say about all of that. Alex Miller, country music performer, dude was on American Idol. And he will be performing at this year's Farm On benefit concert as part of Farm Journal Field Days. You can get more information on that at farmjournalfielddays.com. And then Chris Bennett. And this is, I have no idea what Chris and I are going to talk about. I'm just going to kind of start it off with, hey, Chris, what have you been watching lately? If you have listened to Chris Bennett before on previous installments of AgriTalk, you know that he's always got a tale to tell, and I can't wait to hear what he's got to say. And then, of course, right after the news, Greg Henderson from Drovers. He's down at NCBA, the National Cattlemen's Beef Association Convention. I'm not even sure where it is this year. You know what? We'll find out in just a moment. But first, let's look into the news. Economists surveyed by the... Oh, Nashville, says Big Apple. Thank you, Joe. So we'll hear from Greg Henderson from Drovers live from Nashville. Economists surveyed by the Wall Street Journal expect higher inflation to persist for a while, but estimated on average that annual inflation measured by the CPI, that's the Consumer Price Index, would gradually decline to 4.1% in December. The issue of when the Fed will start to remove its accommodative monetary policy continues to be a focal point, with additional Fed officials largely indicating the time is getting closer. Interestingly, though, comments by some Fed officials continue to indicate there is not yet a specific unified view on the Fed, though some are pushing action sooner rather than later. So I think probably what happens here is, since there really isn't that unified view on what to do about this stuff, the issue continues to be debated, discussed, kicked on down the road. Well, in a statement released early Wednesday by the White House, the Biden administration urged OPEC Plus to boost oil output in a bid to push gasoline prices lower, and it's drawing criticism from several sides. Republicans, for one, called out the administration for their efforts to cancel the Keystone XL pipeline and to pause oil and gas lease sales on federal lands and waters. House members return early from recess to consider the budget resolution framework just approved by the Senate. Then it will finish its recess. Senate committees are, you got to get that whole recess in there, right? Even if it is divided. Senate committees are working on the details of what will be included in the actual reconciliation bill, which could be considered as soon as mid-September. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer said members of the dozen or so relevant panels will continue to meet weekly over the next month to get the reconciliation bill ready by September 15. House members will not receive the $3.5 trillion bill until the fall, and Speaker Pelosi has indicated she will not take it up until the Senate also clears the human infrastructure measure. This is going to be job security for this handsome newsman reporting on this. I'm guessing it's going to go on and on and on and on. China lowered its soybean import projection for 2020 and 21 by 1.84 million metric tons, noting sliding crush margins in recent months and delayed purchases of the oilseed, according to its monthly China Ag Supply and Demand Estimates report. A collapse in hog production margins have also curbed soy meal use, with the country also working to use more wheat in feed. China's soybean import forecast for 21-22 held steady at 102 million metric tons. And China has unveiled a five-year plan to strengthen control of their economy. The plan wants to strengthen regulatory control over strategic sectors, including technology and healthcare, in Beijing's latest push to assert Communist Party supremacy over the world's second largest economy. The party's Central Committee and the State Council, or Cabinet, jointly released a document late Wednesday that would expand government legislation and build a modern regulatory environment to, quote, meet people's ever-growing demands for a good life. And more controversy about China's decision to sentence a Canadian businessman to 11 years in prison. A Canadian Prime Minister, Justin Trudeau, called the court's decision, quote, absolutely unacceptable and unjust. Let's get over to Greg Henderson now from Drovers, live from NCBA in Nashville. Greg, thanks for joining us this morning. How you doing, buddy?
I'm good. Thanks for having me. Nashville is just as warm as about every other place in the Midwest, so I feel right at home.
Outstanding, sir. Well, as you're down there, what are some of the key issues? What's the scuttlebutt?
Sure. So normally we talk about the mood of the Cowboys in attendance, and and I can tell you that the mood is pretty good, mainly because we're seeing a record beef demand, according to Cattle Facts' Outlook seminar. It's the highest it's been in 30 years. Wholesale beef prices, as we know, have been pretty high, and they're suggesting that the shrinking cattle herd is going to lead to better prices in 22 and 23. So that's good news for the beef industry and all the Cowboys. Key issue, obviously, is sustainability. And NCBA has done some research on sustainability and what consumers believe and what they think about sustainability. One thing that comes through is that cattlemen and ranchers are believable, and that they that the image of those producers is rather high among consumers. So maybe there's some misperceptions about what we're how we raise beef, but there is the opportunity to see some change there. One issue of note on the marketing committee, which marketing has been rather a big issue this year. The marketing committee was short and rather bland. They sent forward a couple of resolutions suggesting that they want more transparency in the markets, but it was not the fireworks that many of us were expecting to happen there. So,
well, that might be all right, as long as they got that keyword transparency worked in there.
Absolutely. So obviously there's a lot of new technologies on display in the show here, and many of them too long to go here.
Outstanding. Thanks, Greg Henderson. We'll be back with Brian Grady. Find farm equipment on Machina Repeats August 17 online auction. No reserve, no buyer fees. Start bidding now. Auctions.machinarepeat.com.
Hi, everybody. Chip Flory here. It's almost time for the Pro Farmer Crop Tour, and you can join us for the live nightly broadcast or come to one of the 7 tour stops near you. Or do both. No matter how you experience Crop Tour, you'll find the most followed Crop Evaluation of the Year delivers the insights into potential corn and soybean production that you've come to count on. See you on the tour August 16th through the 19th. Find tour stop locations and online registration at profarmer.com/register.
Farm Journal and the National FFA Foundation present the second annual Farm On Benefit Concert featuring country music star Easton Corbin on September 20th at 7 Central on RFD TV. True statement, Davis. True statement. Thank you for bringing that. Welcome back to AgriTalk. Your pal, Davis Michelson, behind the big green leafy microphone of AgriTalk. And we will be speaking with another performer from that very exposition, the Farm On Benefit concert, just a little bit later on in the show. So stick around for that right after the bottom of the hour. But right now, I've got editor Brian Grady. Brian, I imagine you're packing your bags. You're deciding. Gosh, do I bring the Speedo? Do I not? Do I bring the sandals or the work boots? Brian, you're getting ready for crop tour. How goes the prep?
Well, good, Davis. But I got a little nervous there when you said you were going to be talking to a performer on the Farm On concert. I thought you were going to like tease me that I was going to be singing or something. Probably wouldn't be the best performance.
You got time to get some guitar lessons in, brother. You're a big talent. You can do it.
It would be very amateurish.
Well, one thing that you are an absolute pro at is leading that eastern leg of the crop tour, and that is, I mean, you're starting Monday, baby.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, we'll have USDA's estimates, first estimates here in about a half an hour or so, 40 minutes. But, you know, they don't do the field sampling any longer in August. So crop tour will be the first broad-based look at samples across the Corn Belt for both corn and soybean crops.
Now, I do want to talk about those report expectations just a little bit, but just refresh us last year. I remember late in the crop tour week last year, you started using terms like stealth drought up into northeastern Iowa. Been an awful lot of rain in some parts of the eastern belt there. What's your level of expectation?
Well, obviously, going into crop tour, we don't want to have any preconceived notions, so to speak. But you can look at crop condition ratings, and you kind of get an idea. You know, the drought monitor gives us an idea that you know, we've got very dry conditions in some of these areas of the Western Corn Belt and so on. So, you know, that all comes into play. Eastern Corn Belt had a much better growing season, generally speaking, and expecting to see some pretty big yields in some of those areas out there. But you never know until you get out into the field. And that's the importance of pulling those samples and tabulating the data and coming up at the end of the week with what the best number is on corn is the average of all the roughly 1,500 samples that we'll pull next week. And that gives us an indication of yield potential from basically one end of the Corn Belt to the other.
Well, and programming note, we will be keeping close tabs with Brian Grady on the eastern leg. Chip's going out west, so we'll hear from him as well throughout the day right here on AgriTalk, so you can get the details as they come in. Very excited about next week for all the details and to finally get scouts out there in the fields, because as you say, this report, much anticipated, coming out in, well, not quite, a little better than a half an hour now, doesn't include a boots on the ground look from USDA itself. So tell us, give us the broad overview. What's the general level of expectation for the upcoming report today?
Well, farmer surveys, satellite imagery, those types of things will be what USDA used to formulate these initial estimates. You know, that was a change that was made last year in 2020, and will continue on, I would anticipate, for the foreseeable future. It's not going to go back to the August objective yield surveys. So corn production is going to be about 15 billion bushels based on what the trade is anticipating. And soybeans, 4.375, just shy of 4.4 billion bushels, somewhere in there, is the expectation. So we'll see. You know, the yield estimates they anticipate will be down for both versus the July projections. Now, keep in mind, July wasn't survey-based, so it's a projection versus an estimate, and there's a difference there. But they anticipate that both production and the yield to come down for corn and soybeans.
Now, we'll talk about the markets in your usual bottom of the hour hit, specifically their action so far today. But has the market already sort of baked in one way or the other on that yield projection?
Well, you know, I think that the average estimate, like I said, on corn is 177.6. I think we're trading close to that, to be honest with you. Soybeans 50.4 is the average estimate, and I, you know, probably close to that, a little bit sub trend line for both. You know, if you're anticipating that you're going to see a really low number from USDA this morning, you're going to be disappointed in a half an hour, I believe. The history doesn't tell us that that's going to be the case. In fact, the recent history tells us that the trade misses too low with the average estimates. And if that's the case, especially on corn, but if that's the case, it'll be something above 177.6, which is the average estimate, like I said.
So from what you're describing, your personal as an analyst, your thoughts on what we expect to see here. You know, I've been hearing a lot about, oh, these markets seem to be coiling for a move, and I'm not sure if that move is to the upside or to the downside. If it comes in as you expect, as you've outlined for us here, does that have enough juice in it to uncoil the spring in either direction?
Well, I do think the history is that we will see a pretty volatile price reaction to the data. We just don't know in which direction, and you know, there's no real confidence. If you look back over the past, you know, 40 years or so, it's evenly split corn and beans, whether it's a move up or a move down. And so you can't say with any confidence whether it's going to be a big move to the upside or a big move to the downside. Sure. But the history tells us that it will be a volatile price reaction. So where we're trading right now, mid-morning, probably isn't going to be where we end up at the end of the session after the report date is factored in.
Boy, it'd sure be nice to get corn broke away from that 550 area.
Yeah, it's been a definite magnet for weeks now, and you know, that's our comfort level. And you know, if you go back a couple weeks, if not a month or so ago, I was talking to Chip on the afternoon show, and I said, you know, $5 appears to be too cheap in December corn, $6 appears to be too rich. And 550 happens to be right in the middle of that range. And so, yeah. You know, I think that that's, you know, until we get something that changes that, that will be the case. Now, at 11 Central here, we may get something that changes that and push us either to the lower end of that range or the upper end of that range and kind of set the tone as we move through the harvest season.
Yeah. Now, we talked to Jim McCormick from agmarket.net yesterday. And I've heard from others as well right here on AgriTalk that it could all come down to export demand. And Jim's comment was, man, USDA is probably going to be hesitant to do anything too bold, too, you know, extravagant on the export demand figures. Would you agree with that?
Well, you know, if you look at the old crop balance sheets, they need to come down on corn. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Soybeans. Probably inch down there. You know, if you're talking about new crop, you know, it's just not a whole lot of likelihood that you'll see a lot of usage changes. I think all the usage changes will be as a percent of or a portion of whatever they do with the supply side versus last month's projections.
So let me ask you this, and this is kind of a weird question, but what surprise in this report would not surprise you?
I think world wheat ending stocks need to come down significantly more than what the trade is anticipating. When you look at where USDA is positioned with the Canadian crop last month, that needs to be hacked quite a bit. The Russian crop needs to be cut quite a bit. The U.S. crop in all likelihood is going to be cut at least some. And you add all that up, and I think that the world wheat production number comes down significantly enough that it has to influence the world wheat ending stocks number greater than what's anticipated.
And I guess on the corn and beans side, we're still sitting with pretty tight stocks. I mean, if the yield on the corn and the soybeans comes out sort of as expected, that's going to keep us right in that tight stocks position, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Supply cushion, there just isn't much. And for the new crop marketing year, and you know, so kind of the USDA is going to have to get real creative if they have to lop too much off on the yield. And I think that what we'll see is a progression, and which is what we should see every year, You know, August to September, September, October, October, November, November to final, where they, you know, kind of ease their way into that, the yield estimates, the production estimates, and those types of things. You know, I don't think that they can afford to, because of the tight supply side cushion, get too aggressive with cuts to either corn or soybeans at this stage.
Outstanding. Well, we just covered an awful lot there. Crop Tour coming up next week. We've got reports coming out in a half an hour now. I'm going to hang on to Brian for just a little bit longer. We're going to get his thoughts on today's market action in the moment, but a volatile day of trade possibly up ahead. We'll be right back with more AgriTalk. Stick around.
Farm Journal and the National FFA Foundation present the second annual Farm On Benefit Concert, featuring country music star Easton Corbin. The concert will air on Monday, September 20 at 7 Central on RFD-TV. And your FFAer can be part of it. Just text a picture of them in their blue jacket with the words Farm On to 31313 or use the Farm On hashtag on social media. Join us for the hashtag Farm On Benefit Concert, September 20 at 7 p.m. on RFD-TV.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Well, as promised, Brian Grady's sticking around to help us get our heads around these pre-report markets right now. So, Brian, I'm looking at corn down about 6-7 cents, soybeans down around 12-13, call it. I called it a holding pattern ahead of the reports. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I wouldn't read too much into mid-morning price action here. Like I said in the previous segment, the where we finish today is way more important than where we're trading ahead of the reports. It's just pre-report positioning, to be honest with you. We've had some strength, and we're pulling back now on that. Soy oil market's under some pressure. I'd call that, you know, moderate, borderline heavy, and that's having an influence on soybeans so far this morning.
The wheat looks moderately strong. Mild strength? Moderate strength in the wheat markets?
Yeah, I'd just call it mild at this point in time, and you know, I kind of previewed the what I anticipate in the reports. I think that wheat could actually be you know, somewhat of an upside leader if it plays out how I anticipate that USDA may make their adjustments this month. So you know, historically, because of these are the first corn and soybean estimates from USDA in August, those are the markets that really move. But the surprise could be that wheat takes on more of a leadership role this year.
Feeder cattle says, "Hey, corn's lower. Hold my beer." September contract up $1.90 at this point.
Yeah, fully in reaction, I think, to the corn market. You know, live cattle, they aren't doing a whole lot, trading with a mixed tone with the back end of the market a little bit firmer. But, you know, all in all, I think the feeders are reacting to the corn market.
And fat cattle slightly higher as well. Lean hogs making a tepid effort at a recovery after some recent price pressure. That's Brian Grady from Pro Farmer on Markets Now.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. Never miss a story. Text NEWS to 31313 to have today's top stories delivered to your phone.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. So darn glad that you've tuned in this morning. We've got Mike Steenhoek coming up just a little bit later in this segment here. But first, I want to talk to Alex Miller. Alex, good morning, sir. I'm looking at a picture here. There's the American Idol logo. You're on stage. I see boots. I see a Western shirt, and I see an acoustic guitar. And I put it all together, and the math to me equals out to some darn fine country music. Welcome to the show. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing real well. How are you doing? We've been calling since 10:30 Eastern time. We got our times mixed up, so we've been calling all morning.
Well, we're sure glad to have you. I appreciate the extra effort there. Now, do I have this right here that you are a current FFA member?
Well, actually, no. I just graduated high school, so
okay.
I'm not no more. But very love FFA. I've been involved for years and years, and what a good organization.
So sometimes when you're home alone, do you still walk around in the blue jacket even though you've graduated?
No, when I hung it up, I had to hang it up. So I can't no more.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Well, you're going to be part of our second annual Farm On Benefit concert with headliner Easton Corbin. Tell us a little bit about your music. Who are some of your influences? What can we expect out of Alex Miller?
Well, what you can expect out of Alex Miller is a good time. Some of my major influences, I would say, would have to be Merle Haggard and Hank Sr., George Jones, a lot of the old artists.
Oh, the good stuff.
I'm starting to do some more original stuff.
Okay.
Oh, the good stuff. Oh, yes. And so I'm starting to do some more original stuff. And got a little song I'm going to do about my ex-girlfriend out there. Hope y'all will enjoy it. It's going to be an interesting little treat.
What do you call that one? What's the title of it?
Well, I wrote it for my ex, so it's called I'm Over You, So Get Over Me. And that title pretty well explains the song.
I love that. I love that. That sounds great. So I'm sensing a bit of a Southern drawl in your voice. Where do you come from?
Well, I am from Lancaster, Kentucky. I'm about 30 minutes south of Lexington, Kentucky, which is, Keeneland and all that kind of stuff. So pretty small town. We got a very, very small population. So whenever we have big events in town, everybody better show up.
Mm-hmm. Well, big things can come from small towns, that's for sure. Alex, it sounds like you've got a good time planned for everybody. Some great country music. I love your influences. I love that you're writing here. Tell us what it means to you to be able to perform in support of FFA and of agriculture in general.
Well, agriculture, if it wasn't for agriculture, we wouldn't be eating nothing. And my granddad's a farmer. My uncle's a farmer. And it means the world to me. My aunt is actually an ag teacher, so I better do good just for her, because she won't ever let me live it down if I don't. But she's a good lady, and I love the FFA, all it's done to me. I've competed in the National Talent Program and all kinds of things. And the fact that I'm getting to now, after FFA, pursue my career is just amazing.
Well, Alex Miller, I appreciate you taking a moment to share a little bit with us about what you've got coming up at the Farm On Benefit concert. I hope we can talk again real soon. Get those golden vocal cords all warmed up. We're looking forward to hearing from you, brother.
Oh, thank you so much. I'll work on it this morning.
Outstanding, sir. That's Alex Miller. Hey, and your FFAer can be part of it too. Just text a picture of them in their blue jacket with the words Farm On to 31313. That's Farm On to 31313, or by using the Farm On hashtag via social media. That was Alex Miller, an up-and-comer in the country music world. Hope to see big things from him. And right now, I've got Mike Steenhook from the Soy Transportation Coalition. We're shifting gears rather sharply here. Mike, thanks for joining us on AgriTalk. Good morning, sir.
Hey, it's always good to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Dude, the Senate passed the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act. That's H.R. 3684 for you keeping score at home. A vote of 69 to 30. The bill provides $548 billion in additional spending. Walk us through some of the components of this legislation and what's the farming world's takeaway?
Well, one of the things that I was pleased with is, earlier in the year, the debate about infrastructure really included a lot of things that most Americans would not regard as infrastructure. Most Americans can really rally around roads and bridges and ports and freight rail and inland waterways and, even things like broadband and drinking water, those kind of things. And, earlier in the year, there was a real debate about what is infrastructure. So it was a pretty expansive discussion. And subsequent to that, we're really pleased that there has been some narrowing around what is more traditional infrastructure. So the Senate passed this piece of legislation earlier in the week. A couple items that are of particular significance to agriculture is there's $110 billion that has been identified to repair roads, bridges. And that's certainly something that's important to agriculture. A lot of that funding will, we anticipate, find its way into rural areas. And then also $17 billion for ports and waterways. And for an industry like the soybean industry, where over half is exported, you got to be able to have an effective system of inland waterways and ports to be able to launch those products onto the international marketplace. So we're pleased to see some of those provisions in the legislation.
Now, you use that word more traditional infrastructure as being part of this, and I love that. But it sounds like Speaker Pelosi is going to try and tie that more traditional infrastructure component to a less traditional human infrastructure component, and even has said that she won't move anything forward until the two are passed, ready to go, packaged up. Moving forward, how do you like our prospects for passage in the House and this ultimately being signed into law?
Yeah, I mean, the Speaker is she's been public with her comments, and, you know, we certainly would advise, let's do something that American people can rally around, that Republicans and Democrats can agree on, and that's infrastructure. Let's get a bipartisan win. Wouldn't that be nice?
Right.
But, you know, unfortunately, attaching that to some of the other controversial issues, that's a concern for us. The Speaker is catching pressure from both the progressive element of her caucus, but also the more moderate element of her caucus that, you know, that would like to just see something passed in a bipartisan manner that's just infrastructure. So there is a lot of Republicans and Democrats that want to see this move forward. It's clearly a priority of the president. So I think the prospects are pretty healthy that we'll get something done. But, you know, I used to work on Capitol Hill, and, you know, it's a place where good ideas actually die, and where disappointment can occur. And so you never put it past Washington, D.C. to wrestle defeat from the clutches of victory.
Right. It ain't just Vegas, baby, right?
Yeah.
Well, so when you talk about the two sort of ideologies pulling in different directions, you've got progressives who aren't happy, you've got a more conservative side that isn't quite happy. On that progressive side, I have the sense, and maybe I'm wrong on this, set me straight if I am, but I get the feeling that some of them are saying, hey, look, yeah, this is progressive, but it's maybe not progressive enough for us. Is that the case? Have I got that right?
Oh, yeah, there's a lot of people who think that the $3.5 trillion, you know, reconciliation package that American families plan, where it has a lot of the social spending, is not ambitious enough. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my big question that I have, and I'm, you know, more of a fiscal conservative person, is at what point does the American people have trillion fatigue? We're just passing these trillion-dollar measures left and right. And again, I think there's a time and a place for investing vigorously in infrastructure, but, you know, the question is it appropriate to do some of these other areas? And obviously a big debate around that.
Well, and when you talk about getting out the big White House checkbook here, I mean, I'm hearing some mutterings, more than mutterings, really, concerns with the degree of deficit spending occurring in D.C. right now.
Yeah, and that is a very legitimate issue, and that was, you know, a lot of those who voted against the package in the Senate, you know, they're strong advocates for infrastructure, but they have this concern about, you know, the degree of deficit spending that we're having. And, you know, something else that I think it would be wise to keep focused on is, you know, we're seeing more and more inflationary pressure. There was a report issued today about, you know, inflation continuing to increase. And, you know, inflation is caused by a lot of different things. But one of the contributing factors is the extent to which the government is printing money and spending. And that certainly is a contributing factor to it. And so I think that is something that should be a legitimate concern and certainly top of mind.
Well, we're gonna run short on time here if we're not careful here. But can you talk about what's in this for bio-based products, please?
Yeah, that was something that was a disappointment for a lot of people in agriculture, and that it wasn't included in that for the, you know, ethanol and biodiesel. But there is a segment in there that promotes the use of bio-based products for construction. So things like soy-based asphalt sealants, soy-based concrete sealants. There's a provision in there that will promote that. So that's something that we're very happy about, and we look forward to promoting more vigorously further down the road.
Outstanding. Mike Steenhoek, Executive Director, Soy Transportation Coalition. Thank you for spending some time for us and bringing so much clarity, brother. I appreciate it.
Hey, it's always a pleasure. Thank you.
Yes, sir. All right. Well, we've got Chris Bennett coming up in the next segment. Gosh, we've we've checked a lot of boxes so far on AgriTalk. We're going to debrief just a little bit, talk with Farm Journal wordsmith Chris Bennett coming up right after the break here. So stick around. Don't go away. I'm really anxious to talk to him. I mean, there's no rat dogs, Hogzilla. We'll see where Chris Bennett wants to go next.
Your next piece of equipment is on MachineryPete.com. Search equipment from dealerships across the country to find what you're looking for. Only on MachineryPete.com.
Yeah, baby. A little more Van Halen for you. The good stuff. Right here on AgriTalk. Thanks for tuning in, everyone. My next guest, Chris Bennett from Farm Journal. Chris, good morning, sir. How are you?
Davis Michelson, good morning to you. It's a privilege to be on here with you. Thank you for the opportunity.
Well, you know, it's great to have you on. We've checked in with Kentucky. We've checked in with Nashville. And I also, if I'm not mistaken, am detecting a certain southern drawl in your diction as well. Tell us in the South you are from, sir.
Come on down, Davis. Kind of maybe between Tupelo and Oxford, think like that. So kind of in Northeast Mississippi.
Outstanding. Representing for the South today on AgriTalk. Love it. Dude, you. I love reading your work. I love the stories that you tell, the yarns that you spin. And I just wanted to touch base with you and see what you got cooking. What's something that's interesting to you right now? What's on your mind?
Big Ten Four, Davis. I tell you what, got some bitter and some sweet and some plain odd here. China's swirling, as you know, and I'm working on a story right now regarding different machinations with our politicians, some of them good, some of them not so good. Congressman Dan Newhouse in Washington has something called Securing America's Land from Foreign Interference Act. Very important, Davis. Basically, it prevents China, the CCP, from buying U.S. farmland and anyone related to the CCP. China's got like 200,000 acres right now of U.S. farmland, which is a blip, which might make no difference to some people. The point is they've acquired most of that in the last 10 years, so they're dipping their toe into the pool. Meanwhile, you got Congressman Rick Crawford of Arkansas trying to get something passed so that possibly USDA might institute some sort of intelligence service within USDA, and the last thing we want to see is government to grow. But with all of the IP theft and all the agriculture technology theft, the idea of having some division within USDA to keep an eye on these kind of things, it might have legs. And Davis, you know, on the agronomic front, got a really interesting story. Just finished, a guy named Adam Chapel in Northeast Arkansas has switched over his cotton, all of his cotton acres, to 76-inch rows. And you've basically got one line of plants, one line, and then you scoot over 76 inches. And I know, you know, all the listeners, I'm sure, know wide row corn with 60 inches in between. This is 16 more. When you stand in there and you see that wide space between the crop rows, it's kind of stunning, and he's doing a fine job with it.
76 Davis, inches. That's more, okay. More, so yeah, now if I really wanted to, I could take and lay a sleeping bag down and lay lengthwise and have a good comfortable sleep between rows that wide. What's sort of the standard on cotton? I guess I have no idea.
Well, you know, you're going to normally be in your 30s.
Right.
It's going to be tight. It's going to be extremely tight in there compared to, as you described, you could sit down in there. You could basically tailgate in there. But when you extrapolate and you look at the amount of herbicides that could be saved, seed savings, all that, if you can get the formula right like he has done, then you're on to something. But Davis, in a far more sobering note, ran across a farmer, a very inspirational guy named Carl Lucas in northwest Alabama, and did a story on him. He's in his 70s. He got caught up in a PTO, and just a wild story here. he spun three times, as in literally three revolutions his body went through the TPO, a PTO, and it ripped his arm off, kind of partially tore an artery out of his leg and did horrific damage to his body. But a year later, that man with no arm is back in his fields working, and he was quite an inspiration to talk to, learn from, and you talk about a man with a steel backbone. If you want something odd that'll just get your mind spinning, there's a story I've just finished a fiction to publish. It's in the 1860s, some farmers came down the Mississippi River and ended up in Arkansas. They took their steamboat, hauled it up out of the water, and built a house around a little old tiny farmhouse. The house is still there, and you would have no idea there's a steamboat inside the house except when you go up into the attic. When you crawl in the attic, Davis, you can see the cedar poles. You can see the roof of the steamboat. In other words, you crawl in the attic, and you're in in a space with two roofs, kind of like being in a place with two teepees. It's absolutely fascinating, and it gives the question of how many of these type houses might be out there on farmland that we simply don't recognize or don't know about. But maybe what takes the cake for the moment as far as the oddities, I stumbled across a story and spoke to several individuals in the know on a coon dog that was trapped in a tree in the 1960s, maybe the 1950s, 1940s. They're not sure. He was trapped in a tree 28 feet up. In other words, he chased this coon up a tree, got up to roughly 25, 28 feet, and got stuck, suffocated. They never found him. 20, 30 years later, a logging crew came in. They cut that tree up, having no idea the dog was inside.
Wow.
And because he had been in the tree, in a hollow tree, he had sucked in all the tannins from this chestnut oak, and he was preserved. I mean, it looked like the ancient Egyptians worked on this fella.
Oh,
he
you're
preserved.
Kidding.
Anyhow, he's in a museum today down in Waycross, Georgia. So I've started a story on him, and there's a bunch of stories about him, but none of them had gotten really good sources. I got a couple of people who really ran their mouths well for this, and it's just going to be pretty dang interesting when it comes out.
That's awesome. We are super tight on time, Chris, but where can people find your work?
They can go on agweb.com or they can email me at cbennett@farmjournal.com. cbennett@farmjournal.com. And Davis, thank you very, very much for the privilege today.
Absolutely. It's always great to talk to you, Chris, and I want to talk to you again some more. Come back this afternoon. We got Brian Doherty on AgriTalk.